Zombieek. Thought I would have a little reading, just because, you know, we got some time to fill. I've got this book, Uncanny, which someone has scribbled on the eyeball of the kid and written the letter F above his eyebrow, so that's exciting. I am very excited. I'm about to read A Good Tip for Ghosts. I have not read this story since probably primary school. Yeah, let's start. Dad was grabbing... No, that was a shit start. Let's start again. Dad was scabbing around in the rubbish. How embarrassing, said Pete. It's lucky there's no one else here to see us. I looked around the tip. He was right. No one was dumping rubbish except us. There was just Dad, me, and my twin brother Pete. The man driving the bulldozer didn't count. He was probably used to people coming to the tip with junk and then taking a whole pile of stuff back home. It was a huge tip with a large muddy pond in the middle. I noticed a steer's skull on a post in the water. There were flies everywhere, buzzing and crawling over the disgusting piles. Thousands of seagulls were following the bulldozer looking for rotten bits of food. These country tips are fantastic, yelled Dad, right to the stick. Come and help me get this. He was trying to dig out an old pram. I looked around and groaned. Another car had just pulled up. It was a real flash one, a Mercedes. We had just arrived in Allensford the day before. It was a little country town where everybody would know what was going on. Pete and I had to start at a new school the next day. Last thing we wanted was someone to see us digging around in the tip. A man and a boy got out of the Mercedes. They had a neat little bag of rubbish, which the man dropped onto the ground. A cloud of flies rose into the air. Let's get out of here, the man said to the boy. This place stinks. The boy was about my age, but he was twice as big as me. He had red hair and he looked tough. I could see that he was gritting his head off and staring at our car. The back seat of our old bomb was full of Dad's findings. There was a mangled typewriter, a baseball bat, two broken chairs, a torn picture of a green lady lying on a tree branch, and a bike with no wheels. I blushed. Dad just could not go to the tip without taking half of it back home with him. I looked up at the kid with red hair again. He was pointing at Dad and laughing fit to bust. Oh no, groaned Pete. Look what he's got now. Dad had run over to the bulldozer and held up his hand to stop the driver. He was digging around in front of its blade. He had found an arm sticking out of the junk. It looked like a human arm, but it wasn't. It was the arm of one of those shop dummies they put dresses on. Dad pulled and yelled and jiggled and wriggled and jiggled inside of it until he got the whole thing out. Then he stood there holding it up for all the world to see. A female shop dummy with no clothes on. Aw, yeah. It had a wig for hair, but apart from that, it was stark naked. Its left arm pointed up at the sky. It looked like Dad was standing there with a naked woman. The red-haired kid and his father were both laughing by now. The boy bent down and picked up something from the ground. Then they got into their Mercedes and disappeared through the gate. Pete and I hung our heads with shame. We couldn't bring ourselves to look as Dad dragged the dummy back to the car. I hoped, like anything, that the red-haired kid didn't go to Allensford school. Wonderful, hooted Dad as he examined the shop dummy. Your mother will be pleased. She can use this for making dresses. Don't give me that, yelled Pete. You promised Mum that you wouldn't bring anything back from the tip. Dad looked a bit sheepish. This is different, boys. This isn't junk. This is valuable stuff. Now give me a hand to get this dummy into the car. Not me, I said. Nor me, added Pete. I'm not touching her. She hasn't got any clothes on. It's rude. How rude. There was no room in the back of the car, so Dad sat her up in the front. He put the seatbelt on her to stop her falling over. Her lifted up arm poked through a rust hole in the roof. Where are we supposed to sit? I asked. There's no room in the back. One on each side of her, said Dad. We'll all sit in the front. There's plenty of room. So that's how we went home. Shame. Oh, terrible shame. Driving along the road with a naked dummy sitting between us. Every time we passed someone, Pete and I ducked down so that they couldn't see us. Dad just laughed. It was all right for him. He wasn't starting at a new school in the morning. Then it happened. A blue flashing light, a siren, a loud voice saying, "Pull over, driver." It was the police. A policeman got off his motorbike and walked slowly to the car. He pulled off his gloves and adjusted his sunglasses. Then he leaned in the window. "What's this naked lady?" He started off in a cross voice, but then he started laughing. He doubled up, holding his side and pointing to the dummy. "We had a report that there was a naked woman," he managed to get out in between gasps. "It was only a shop dummy." I thought he was never going to stop laughing, but finally he said, "Where did you get all this stuff, sir?" "The Arnsford Tip," answered Dad. "The locals call it Haunted Tip," said the policeman with a grin. He seemed to want to stay and talk. He probably was trying to figure out if Dad was a nutcase or not. Pete and I just sat there, trying not to be seen. "No one will go there after dark," he told us. "They say the ghost of Old Man Chompers walks that tip at night." "Old Man Chompers?" said Dad. "Yes, he was the caretaker of the tip long ago. They say he was mining his two grandchildren there one day. The children disappeared and were never found. The ground collapsed and all the rubbish fell into a huge hole. People think the children were buried under piles of rubbish. Their bodies were never discovered because the hole filled up with water and formed a lake. Not long after that, Old Man Chompers died. People have said that they have seen him walking the tip at night. He pokes at the rubbish, turning things over. He's looking for his lost grandchildren. He moans and groans and calls out for his lost darlings." I shivered and looked at Pete. "You won't catch me going to that tip again," I said. "Good," said the policeman. "It's a dangerous spot. No place for kids. Anyway, it is said that Old Man Chompers can't leave the tip until he finds his darlings. He has to stay there until he finds them. That's why he wanders the lonely tip at night. He might think that you two would do instead if he caught you there." Then he said something that made my knees wobble. His grandchildren were twins. "An Old Man Chompers has poor eyesight. He might mistake you boys for his lost children." The policeman looked us straight in the eyes and then turned and walked off, chuckling as he went.
"Oh, it's good to hear a boisterous policeman laugh."
The next day, Pete and I started at Allensford School. It was even worse than we thought it would be. The redhead kid was waiting at the gate with his tough mates. "Here they are," he yelled with glee. "The twins from the tip." In a loud voice, he started to tell everyone about Dad and the naked shop dummy. Pete and I looked at each other helplessly. We couldn't deny the story. It was true. I could feel tears starting to form behind my eyes. I had to stop them escaping, so I blinked real hard. I noticed that Pete was doing the same thing.
"You gonna cry?"
It's bad enough starting a new school at the best of times, but when you have to live down something like this, it's just terrible. And I feel terrible. Fortunately, the bell went and we had to go inside. At recess time, though, it was even worse. "I'm the top dog here," said the red-haired boy. His name was James Gribble. "Sounds familiar?" He pushed Pete in the chest. Also, Pete sounds familiar, I suppose. "What's your name, kid?" he asked roughly. "Pete." Gribble gave a twisted grin. "This twin is Pete. So this one," he said, pointing at me, "must be Repeat. Pete and Repeat, the scabby twins from the tip." All the kids started to laugh. Some of them weren't laughing too loudly, though. I could see that they didn't like Gribble that much, but they were too scared of him to do anything. That's how they do it. After the laughter died down, Gribble went and fetched a shoebox with a small hole in the end. "I'm the boss here," he said. "Every new kid has to take my nerve test. If you pass the nerve test, you're okay. If you won't do it, I thump you every day until you do." He held up a clenched fist. The kids all crowded round to see what would happen. The shoebox had a lid which was tied on with string. Gribble pushed the box into my hand. "Seeing you like the tip so much, Repeat," he leered, "I've brought something back from there for you. One of you two has to have enough nerve to put your hand in there and take out the mystery object that I found at the tip." Pete and I looked at the hole in the box. There was just enough room to put a hand inside. "Go on," said Gribble, "or you get your first thump now." I don't mind telling you that I was scared. There was something in the box from the tip. It could be anything. A dead rat, or even worse, a live rat. Or maybe a loaded mouse trap. My mind thought of the most terrible things. I didn't want to do it, but then I noticed one of the kids was nodding to me. A little kid with a kind face. He seemed to be telling me that it was okay. I looked at Gribble. "I've always heard that you should fight a bully when they first pick on you. Then if you fight hard and hurt them, they'll leave you alone. Even if you lose the fight, everyone will respect you and it will be okay." I sighed. Gribble was twice as big as Pete and me put together. He had tough mates. They would wipe the floor with both of us. Things like teaching the bully a lesson only happen on TV. TV. Slowly, I pushed my hand into the box. At first, I couldn't feel anything, but then I touched something hard and slimy. It was sort of horseshoe-shaped. I shivered. It was revolting. There were rows of little sharp pointed things. Then I felt another one the same. There were two of them. They reminded me of a broken rabbit trap. They felt like they were made of plastic covered in dry mold. I didn't have the faintest idea what I was holding, but all sorts of horrible things came into my mind. Slowly, I pulled out my hand and looked. It was a set of old, broken, false teeth. They were chipped and cracked and stained brown. They felt yucky, but I smiled at the circle of kids around me. Pete was grinning too. I'd passed the nerve test. Or so I thought. Okay, repeat, said Gribble with a horrible leer. You've passed the first bit of the test. My heart sank. So did Pete's. I didn't realise there was going to be something else. Gribble pushed his face up against mine. Hot. He had bad breath. Now, boys, he growled. You have to take the false teeth back where they came from. Back to the tip. He paused and then he added, at night. Pete and I looked at each other. Goosebumps ran up and down our arms. Before we could say anything, Gribble told us the next bit. And just to make sure that you really go, that you don't just pretend to go, you have to bring back something with you. You have to bring back the steer's skull in the middle of the tip pond by tomorrow morning. You have to prove that you enter the tip at night by bringing back the skull. Didn't you just say that? Pete and I spent the rest of the day worrying. We couldn't concentrate on our schoolwork. I got 2 out of 20 for my maths. Pete got 4 out of 20. The teacher must have thought that the new kids were real dumb. That afternoon, the boy who had nodded at me in the yard passed me a note. It said, guess who likes you? No, it said, you'd better get the skull. Gribble is real mean. He punched me up every day for a month until I passed his rotten nerve test. Signed, your friend Troy. I passed the note on to Pete. He didn't say anything, but he didn't look too good. After school, we walked sadly out of the gate. As we went, Gribble yelled at us, have a nice night, my darlings. Neither of us could eat any tea that night. Mum looked at us in a funny way, but she didn't say anything. She thought we were just suffering from nerves about the new school. She was right, but only partly. We were also thinking about the ghost of old Chompers and his lonely search for his lost darlings. I looked at Pete and he looked at me. It was like staring in a mirror. It reminded me that old Chompers' lost grandchildren were twins too. I see her every time I look in the mirror. We could pretend to be sick tomorrow, I said to Pete after tea. It wouldn't work, he answered. Mum never gets fooled by that one. Anyway, we would have to go back to school sooner or later. We could tell Dad and... Oh, sure, put in Pete before I could finish. And he'll tell the teachers and everyone in school will call us daubers. You're daubed on. What about throwing the false teeth in the bin and getting a steer skull from somewhere else? I yelled. People would never know that we hadn't really been to the tip. Pete looked at me as if I was a bit crazy. Great, he answered in a cross voice. And where are you going to get a steer skull at this time of night? It can't be any old steer skull, you know. It has to have white horns and horrible teeth. No, we'll have to do it. We'll take back the false teeth to the tip and bring the steer's skull back with us. There's nothing to be scared of, really. Ghosts aren't true. There aren't any ghosts. People just think they see them when they're scared. I nodded my head without saying anything. I was scared already. I didn't even want to think that I saw a ghost. But I knew Pete was right. We'd have to go. It was the only way. That night, after Mum and Dad had gone to bed, we snuck out of the window and headed off for the tip. We walked slowly along the dusty road, which wound through the moonlit paddocks. Pete carried a rope with a hook on the end for getting the skull out of the middle of the pond. Oh, see, they were prepared. I carried a torch in one hand and the false teeth in the other. They felt all slimy and horrible. Wouldn't you have just put them in like a bag or a box or something? Anyway, I sure was looking forward to getting rid of them. You could have put them in your mouth. There was not a soul to be seen. The crickets were chirping their heads off, and now and then an owl would hoot. Ooh, ooh. Cows sat silently in the dry grass on the other side of the barbed wire fences. I was really scared, but for some reason the cows made me feel a little better. Of course they did. They're lovely. I don't know why this was, because if anything happened, the cows weren't going to help. Basically, a cow is just a cow. Hey. Don't you badmouth cows. If they could, a cow would eat you and everyone you care about. The further we got from home, the more my knees started to wobble. I kept thinking that every shadow hid something evil and terrible. The inside of my stomach wall felt like a frog was scribbling on it with four pencils. Our first problem started when we reached the tip. It had a high wire fence around it, barbed wire on the top, and the gates were locked. A gentle wind was blowing and the papers stuck to the fence flapped inside. How are we going to get in? I asked Pete. Secretly, I'd hoping we'd have to go home. Climb over, he said. We threw over the rope with the hook on it and clambered up the high wire fence. The wire was saggy and it started to sway from side to side with our weight. We ended up perched on the top, trying to get our legs over the barbed wire. Suddenly, the whole fence lurched over and sent us crashing onto the ground on the inside. Then the fence sprang back up again with the rope on the other side. Ouch. Ow. That hurt, I yelled. I rubbed my aching head. Quiet, whispered Pete fiercely. You're making enough noise to wake the dead. His words sent a chill up my spine. I wish you hadn't said that, I whispered back. Oh, I'm sorry. I wish you hadn't said that, I whispered back. Pete looked up at the fence. We were trapped inside. We'll never get back over that, he said. I could tell that he was thinking the same thing as me. What fools we were. What were we going to do in a lonely tip in the middle of the night? There was no one to help us. There was not another soul there. Or was there? A little way off, behind some old rusting car bodies, I thought I heard a noise. Pete was looking in the same direction. I was too terrified to move. I wanted to run, but my legs just wouldn't work. I opened my mouth to scream, but nothing came out. Pete stood staring as if he was bolted to the ground. It was a rustling, tapping noise. It sounded like someone digging around in the junk, turning things over. It was coming in our direction. I just stood there, pretending to be a dead tree or a post. I wished the moon would go in and stop shining on my white face. The tapping grew louder. It was coming closer. And then we saw it, or him, or whatever it was. An old man with a battered hat. He was poking the ground with a bent stick. He was rustling in the rubbish. He came on slowly. He was limping. He was bent and seemed to be holding his old dirty trousers up with one hand. He came towards us with a terrible shuffle. Pete and I both noticed it at the same time. His feet weren't touching the ground. He was moving across the rubbish about 30 centimetres above the surface. It was the ghost of Old Man Chompers. We both screeched the same word at exactly the same moment.
Run.
And we did run. We tore through the waist-high rubbish, scrambling, screaming, scrabbling, not noticing the waves of silent rats slithering out of our way, not feeling the scratches of dump junk, not daring to turn and snatch a stare at the horrible spectre who hobbled behind us. Finally, with bursting lungs, we crawled into the back of an old car. It had no doors or windows, so we crouched low, not breathing, not looking, not even hoping. Why had we come to this awful place? Fools, fools, fools! Suddenly the thought of Gribble and the steer's skull and the false teeth seemed stupid. I would have fought 1,000 Gribbles rather than be here, trapped in a tip with a ghost. I could feel Pete trembling beside me, and I could hear the voice of someone else. A creaking, croaking cry. My darlings! My darlings! My darlings!
My darlings!
I knew it. I just knew it. The ghost of Old Man Chompers had seen us. He thought we were his lost darlings, his dead grandchildren. He was coming to get us. Then he'd be able to leave this place and take us with him to that great ghost tip in the sky. Yeah, I'm sure that's where he wants to go. I thought of Mum and Dad. I thought of my nice warm bed. I'd never see them again. Our parents would never know what happened to us, never know that we had come to our end in the bowels of the Ellensford tip. At last! At last! My darlings! At last! The wailing voice was nearby. He knew where we were. Without a word, we bolted out of the car. We fled blindly across the festering tip until we reached the pond. The deep black pond filled with floating foulness. And behind, slowly hobbling above the bile, came the searching figure of Old Chompers. We were trapped against the edge of the pond. In panic, we looked around for escape. Mountains of junk loomed over us on either side. To the back was the pond, and to the front, we dared not look. Quick, yelled Pete. Help me with this. He was pulling at an old rusty bath, dragging it towards the water. It won't float, I gasped. Look at the plug hole. The water will get in. It'll sink. Pete bent down and scratched off a dollop of wet clay from the edge of the water. He jammed it into the plug hole. Come on, he panted. Hurry. The bath was heavy, but terror made us strong. We launched it out into the murky water. Then we scrambled in, just in time. The bath rocked dangerously from side to side, but slowly it floated away from the approaching horror. We paddled frantically with our hands until the bath reached the middle of the pond. Then we stopped and stared at old Chompers. He hobbled to the edge of the water. He staggered towards us. He was walking on the water, his hands outstretched. "My darlings," he groaned. "My long-lost darlings." Pete and I clung to the sides of the bath with frozen fingers. The moon went in and everything was black. Suddenly there was a pop. The clay plug shot into the air, followed by a spout of water. Brown wetness swirled in the bath. We were sinking. In a flash, we found ourselves swimming in the filthy water. We both headed for the shore, splashing and shouting and struggling. Pete was a better swimmer than me. He disappeared into the gloom. My jumper soaked up the water and dragged me down. I went under. I came up again and spat out the lumpy brown liquid. I knew I would drown unless I could find something to grab onto. The bath was gone. Then my hand touched something. It was a post with something on the end. I grabbed onto it and kicked towards the shore. As my feet touched the bottom, I realized that the post had horns. Then I saw that it had a face. A staring dead face with sharp teeth. It was the horrible leering steer's skull. I screamed and crawled over to where Pete lay on the shore. We were both soaked to the skin. We were cold and exhausted. We were too tired to move. The ghost of old man Chompers crept across the water with outstretched hands. His face was wrinkled like a bowl of hard cold custard. His mouth was as a black hole formed in the custard by a vanished golf ball. He chuckled as he looked at me. In my left hand I still had the false teeth. All the time I had been running I held on to them. I had no other weapon, so I held them out in front of me. My fingers were shaking so much that it made them chatter. As the ghost of old man Chompers jumped at me, I screamed and screamed and I tried to push him off with the teeth. He grabbed the false teeth from my quivering fingers and shoved them into his mouth. "At last," he said. "I found them. My darlings. My darlings." He opened and closed his mouth with joy, making sucking noises as he did it. After a bit of this, he pulled out a ghostly apple from his pocket and started to chomp on it. "Wonderful," he cackled. "Wonderful. You don't know what it was like without my darlings. I owe you boys a big favour for bringing these back." "Yeah, you do." We both lay there looking at the grinning ghost. Suddenly, he didn't seem so scary. Pete found his voice first. "You mean," he said, "that your darlings are your false teeth? Not your long-lost grandchildren?" The ghost started to cackle even more. "Them?" he said. "Them brats. What do I want them for? I told them not to play around here. Told them it was dangerous. No, I was looking for these." He smacked his lips again and showed the cracked brown teeth. "Couldn't leave without these. I've been looking for them for years. Now I can go. Now I can leave this rotten dump and join all the others." As he said this, he started to fade away. I knew that we would never see him again. "Wait," yelled Pete. "Don't go. Come back." Chompers stopped fading and looked at Pete. "What?" he said. "What do you want?" I could see that he was in a hurry. He didn't want to hang around the tip for any longer than he had to. Pete looked the ghost straight in the eye. "You said that you owe us a big favour for bringing your teeth back." "Well, we want to be paid back. We want one favour before you go." "Well," said old Chompers with a chip smile. "What is it?" Old Chompers wasn't the only one who didn't want to hang around that tip. He showed us a hole in the fence and we ran back down that road as fast as we could go. When we got back to Allensford, we climbed up a certain tree and looked in a certain window. Gribble was fast asleep in bed. He had a big smile on his face. He'd fallen asleep thinking about how smart he was for making those dumb twins go to the tip in the middle of the night. Suddenly he was awakened by a noise. It sounded like a person tapping with a stick. It was coming towards his window. Then he heard a croaky voice. "My darling," it said. "At last I found my darling." Gribble was terrified. He wanted to scream, but nothing would come out. A terrible figure floated through the wall. He had a face which was wrinkled like a bowl of hard, cold custard. His mouth was a black hole formed in the custard by a vanished golf ball. And in that black hole was a pair of cracked old false teeth. The ghost chuckled as he held the horrible skull over Gribble's head. "I think you wanted this," he said as he dropped his load on Gribble's face. "Ah, Paul, good one." "That was from Pete," he screeched. "And this," he yelled, picking it up again, "is a repeat." Gribble didn't feel the steer's skull for the second time, nor did he see the ghost fade away. He had fainted. The next day at school, though, James Gribble was very nice to me and Pete. I'd never met a more polite boy. And there is one thing I can tell you for a fact. He never mentioned anything about being the top dog ever again. End. Good times, eh? So, yeah, that was somewhat different to the Round the Twist episode, I would say. But overall, I think that same message came across that Gribble is a dick. What do you reckon? Okay, bye.